Why did the Oceanic Six lie? What is the Orchid Station? And are stormtroopers really bad? Executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse will ponder those questions and more in today's official Lost audio podcast hosted by ABC.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the final audio podcast for Season 4 of Lost. No tears, it's sad, I know. But the guys will return, and so will Lost. And there's always ABC.com to tide you over until the DVDs come out, and then there's Comic-Con this summer, which hopefully we'll have a special podcast coming to you all from. Anyway, there's plenty of Lost to hold you over. Now, on to more pressing matters. The guys are here to rehash part 1 of There's No Place Like Home. Of course, parts 2 and 3 air Thursday, May 29th from 9 to 11 p.m. on ABC, and it's available the next day at abc.com. And it's preceded by an encore presentation of part 1, so you can see all 3 hours back-to-back the way it was intended, as long as you have HD, that is. Either way, here now are Damon and Carlton.
Bonjour, Damon.
Hello, Carlton.
How are you today?
A little tired, a little sleepy.
Yeah, we're still working here, believe it or not, even though the episode that you saw last night has aired was part one of the finale. That would probably make you assume that part two of the finale was finished, but in fact,
we're still working on it. No, it's not even close to... Well, it's close to finished.
But there's still many miles to go before we sleep. But we think you guys are going to like the finale. We're going to finish editing it this weekend, and it's coming out pretty well.
We'll see.
I would say.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay. All right. I'll knock on this wood here.
Should we, let's talk a little
bit about...
I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to touch your leg like that.
Yeah, it's okay. I like that my leg sounds like this.
No, you can tell people you have a wood leg. I think we've been doing this podcast for long enough for people to know that. I mean, especially since I've had to sit here with you wearing no pants and having a wood leg.
I don't want to talk about my leg.
Okay.
Well, listen, we had an agreement when this podcast first started that was the only thing that was off limits. And now, just because you're a little punchy, you're bringing that into the lexicon.
Sorry.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. All right. We won't. Well, then let's talk about why did Jack and the rest of the Oceanic Six decide to lie. We're rehashing episode 412.
Well, that's obviously sort of the big question going into the finale, isn't it? Why are the Oceanic Six lying? They've obviously got this story where we've now seen them actually come back to the world. It's fascinating because when we wrote that press conference scene, and this will be fairly exciting for the audience, which is before the finale, ABC is going to re-air episode 12, part 1 again, before the two-hour finale, and you will see an expanded version of the press conference.
With new questions.
With new questions.
And different
questions. Because in writing that scene, we were like, oh my god, this is like, there's so many questions that you want to ask these people about, like, for example, you know, we've gotten some fan questions of why do the Oceanic Six say that there were 8 survivors from the plane,
right,
and who were those other survivors, and their story in a little more detail, but in the show, there was so much we were doing in this episode in part 1 that we had to shelve it. But the audience will, in fact, get to see...
A few more questions. I hate to fall victim to overselling it. It will be engaging.
Right.
And it actually is a very good ramp-up because, you know, the two-hour finale picks up with everybody on various parts of the island, on the freighter, all over the place, in the various sort of disparate circumstances. So it is actually... It was kind of designed to be really a 3-hour viewing experience.
Yes, exactly. In fact, we went to go pitch the finale to the network and studio at the end of part 1. We basically said, and the great thing is the Oceanic Six, you know by the end of part 2 of the finale, they're all going to be together and off the island, but think about where they all are. And we had Noreen, who is my assistant, and Sam Thomas, who's a co-producer on the show and does a lot of our ancillary media, and a couple of the other assistants, including HW, basically working on this arts and crafts project as Carlton and I were actually writing the finale in the midst of the pitch.
Very
late at night, and basically visually saying, okay, Kate and Saeed have just been captured by the others, and they're over here. And Jack, who's another member of the Oceanic Six, is currently running towards the Orchid where Hurley is. But, you know, that's where the bad guys are. And Son and the baby are on the freighter.
So we took this thing with us when we actually pitched to the studio. And just as a visual aid so that everybody could understand, okay, the whole idea of the first part of the finale is you start with these Oceanic Six flying on this cargo plane. They land, they're united, and at the end of the episode, you see they're all in desperate straits and in disparate locations. And so we have this illustration of all of their disparate locations. And like,
that sounds like a country music album. Desperate Straits and Disparate Locations.
Yeah, well, kind of an erudite country music
album. That should be your first banjo, solo banjo album.
I think it will be.
Yeah.
That sounds good. But then there was like this frenzy. All the executives wanted it. It was like, so it's now, I guess, it's going to be displayed over there as some sort of a piece of lost history, which, of course, made all of the people who work in the office very happy that their craft project is now turned into a piece of lost memorabilia.
Yeah, and then the mythology surrounding the Arts and Crafts Project, like, sort of spread to the LA Times, and then the next thing we knew, there was some photographer from the LA Times coming over here and asking to take pictures of it. So the Crafts Project will actually be in the Los Angeles Times, for those of you who are interested in seeing it.
If they decide to put the picture in.
How could they not, though?
I'm just saying that at the end of the day, a photo editor is going to look at a picture of Evangeline Lilly and a picture of the Crafts Project and make a decision.
All right, well.
And we'll see.
I think what they decide. Evangeline's great, but I vote for Crafts.
There was buried in there a reference to H.W., whose real name is Jim, but we call him H.W., like from the movie There Will Be Blood. And so
his name is Daniel Plainview, and this is my son and partner, H.W. Plainview. And he's just this sort of quiet, menacing, reckoning force.
Which is pretty much the same as our H.W.
As our H.W.
Whose name is Jim, but we call him H.W., and he gets our lunch and does various and sundry things, delivers scripts. You know, he's the PA, which is, you know, it's a good job.
Just a little bit of prehashing here, Carlton, just so I have this all straight before we go into questions.
All right.
So we've got a bomb. It would appear a very large bomb has been discovered on the freighter.
Pretty much the biggest bomb I've ever seen, personally.
We don't know who is responsible for putting it there, or what's going to make it go off.
No, but
hopefully
we do
not. The finale will be dealing with this issue.
Yes, it will. It will tell us who put it there and what its purpose is.
Okay, so we've got that. And then we've got the orchid. This place that Ben is supposedly bringing Locke to move the island.
Right.
Do I have that straight?
I always love seeing new Dharma stations. That's always a very cool part of the show for me. So I'm curious to see what the orchid looks like.
I'm curious, too.
We see tantalizing bits of the orchid station for those who have actually looked at the film that we showed last year, Comic-Con. We screened a bit of some outtakes from what was the orientation film for the orchid station. Would it be possible that we might be seeing more of that orientation film, Damon?
If we saw the bloopers for the orientation film at Comic-Con, I would hope that we actually get to see the real deal in the finale. I'd feel pretty ripped off if we didn't.
Oh, well, good.
That was literally the longest setup for a Lost gag ever, though. That last July, we knew that the finale was going to center in the orchid, and that we basically did that. That was very cool.
Yeah, that was fun.
All right. Well, it feels like everything is in place for an exciting 2-hour finale. Are we going to be getting more flash forwards, flashbacks, sort of? What can I expect here?
I think that, you know, the first part of the finale set the tone. We started seeing flash forwards of various members of the Oceanic Six, and I would anticipate that might continue.
Oh, excellent.
But
I'm particularly interested in Sun, by the way, who,
yes,
you know, seems to have grown a pair off the island.
She is awesome, I know. She is really, it's a cool turn for her.
It is.
We have a lot of good questions today, so we're going to actually try to blast through more questions than usual.
Break it out, Carlton.
Okay. So, all right, here we go. This is from Bo Duke, and the heading is, Do Bad Guys Know They Are Bad? Damon and Carlton, being a Lost addict has had some positive benefits. 1, I read a lot more. 2, I never trust anyone. 3, I now try to evaluate situations from all sides. Anyway, here is my question. Do bad guys on Lost know they are bad guys? They say all is fair in love and war. Are the good guys the ones that resort to the least amount of tricks? Are the good guys the ones that harm the least amount of people? As writers, I would like to think that this is something that would interest you. Take Star Wars, for example. Do stormtroopers know that they are bad guys? Or do they see Luke and his band of rebels as lawbreakers that are trying to ruin their true society? My point is, maybe the Kimi Widmore team is not as bad as we think. We think they are bad because we see them as threatening the characters we relate to, but maybe it's Ben that is so bad that extreme measures are necessary to bring him down.
First off, we're very flattered by the question. let's talk a little bit about Stormtroopers for a second, because I feel like this is a prime... I've been looking for an excuse to talk about Stormtroopers, and now finally I have one. Just in the original Star Wars, Luke is sort of out gallivanting around in Tatooine when the droids sort of wander off, and this is when he meets Obi-Wan. But then he returns to the home where he was raised by his Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen, who are very, very calm, you know, loving, peaceful farmers who just live in a little moisture farm on Tatooine, and they live in their little robes, and they have plastic cups, and they never hurt anybody. But when Luke returns, the farm has been completely...
This is getting back to Lost at some point, isn't it?
Yes. When Luke returns, the farm has been completely and totally vaporized, and poor... Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen are just sort of completely steaming skeletons. And this was done by stormtroopers. And I just can't imagine what the stormtroopers were thinking in the process of burning these farmers where they go, I'm a good guy. Like, I have some justification for this. How dare they farm moisture?
But, you know, to be fair, the stormtroopers... Just to argue the stormtroopers' side of this... They have to preserve order in the Alliance.
And you can't have people drinking out of plastic Tupperware.
They're responsible for raising a rebel leader.
But they didn't. I mean, the stormtroopers don't even know that yet. They're just going to recover the droids with the stolen plans. Droids aren't here. Let's kill everybody.
Let's say you run a red light and you say, oh, I didn't see the red light. Does that make it any less bad that you ran the red light?
There are no red lights in Star Wars. They just fly wherever the hell they want to. I'm just saying.
I feel like
you know
we're getting
bad.
Someplace. I'm not sure if it has anything to do with the show, but I think the stormtroopers think they're good.
When you're bad, you're bad. Okay. But that's my
but
answer.
On our show, I would say that
Kimi's bad. Yeah,
he knows he's bad, but he's a guy who does a job.
We just learned Kevin Durant did stand up comedy in Canada. So you know what do we know?
That's the actor who plays Kimi.
Yeah, who's
so,
awesome
you know.
By the way.
Seriously,
for those of you
who
haven't seen 3:10
to
Yuma, yeah. All right, I've got a question for you, Carlton.
You go.
This is from Ace Jace. As an avid UK follower of Lost, I would like to thank you for the quality entertainment that you've helped produce over the past 4 years. Can't wait to see what you've got in store for us over the next few seasons. My question is regarding antipodes, or the regions which lie on opposite sides of the globe. If you put a needle through Tunisia, it ends up coming out in the South Pacific, interestingly enough. So, as we know, Ben and possibly a Dharma polar bear appeared to have warped from the island to Tunisia. Unfortunately, the bear's Bedouin ambushing skills weren't as up to scratch as Mr. Linus's. However, does this mean that the transportation from or to the island via antipodal points on the globe is the Lost teleportation transport some sort of journey through the center of the Earth? And if that's the case, could it also be possible that Yemi's light aircraft, this is the yellow drug smuggler's plane, featured prominently in seasons 1 and 2, ended up going through this antipodal wormhole to the island on its way from Nigeria to Europe via Tunisia? Anyway, thanks again, and continue the good work with the show, Jason.
Wow, that is an excellent question. And I would say that the antipode or pod part of that theory is very intriguing. However, some of the conclusions derived regarding the application of antipode or pod theory might not be exactly correct.
Good answer.
Okay.
Very thorough and completely vague.
All right. This is from Jader No Pants.
Uh-oh.
What's up, my nerds? I absolutely love the show and the podcast, Damon and Carlton. You are my podcast OTP. Although I don't know what OTP is, embarrassingly.
I know what OPP is.
What's that?
Other People's Possessions. Remember the old song?
Wow. I wonder if we could do like a rap banjo number.
Maybe for season seven. I think we could, but I don't think we should.
What's up with Walt? Will we eventually be seeing more of him and learning why he is so special? He seems to be even more special than our own man of faith, Mr. Locke. Thanks for reading and being all around awesome. And by the way, my friend chooses to live a similar lifestyle in Damon in that she doesn't wear pants when we watch Lost. My sister and I support her in her choice and feel that you, Carlton, should provide the same support and validation for Damon. He does, after all, support you and your aspirations of becoming the next banjo maraca idol.
Now that's a true fan. Obviously.
I do support you, by the way.
Well,
and I apologize for mentioning your wooden leg.
You know
and
what?
I won't tell anyone
there
else
you
about
go
your
again.
Wooden leg.
If I'm going to not wear any pants, that means that I'm comfortable letting my wooden leg friggin' show. And you come along and you start mentioning it, and now I'm some sort of freak. So thank you for that.
You want to talk about Walt?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off the rails.
Yeah, we'll probably be seeing Walt again. soon.
Good.
And he's special. I've got another one for you. All this right. is from AnFound6. Dear Damon Carlton, before I ask my question, just wanted to say thanks for making the best TV show ever. You guys help bring joy to my life every Thursday, although I do miss the 9 o'clock time slot. On to my question. Is it safe
to... The 9 o'clock time slot is still there.
Yeah, for the finale, we'll have it back, too.
Yes.
Is it safe to say now that Abaddon is working for Dharma, or an umbrella form of Dharma, trying to find the island, and that his party is not affiliated, but actually against Widmore and Ben's parties? Thanks again for another great season of Lost.
Abaddon works for somebody, whether he works for Ben, Widmore, or parties... not yet articulated. Well, we can't really answer that part of it because we'd give too much away. But yes, Abaddon is, he's not at the top of the food chain for whoever he works for. But it is, you're meant to ponder whether it's Ben or Widmore or whomever. Here we go, Damon. So this is from Mr. Grivas.
Okay.
Dear Damon and Carlton, I've noticed that you guys tend to write a lot of episodes, and usually those tend to be some of the more major episodes of the season. As writers and creators, do you have a short list of favorite episodes that you've written? Are there any episodes that, in the writer's room, tend to get more praise than others? And then, Damon, is there one character that Carlton identifies with most? And Carlton, is there one character that Damon identifies with most? Thank you, Andrew.
You know, as far as the writing goes, you know, very, very rarely will we know, other than the premiere and maybe the finale, that you and I tend to write the premieres and the finales.
Right.
But the episodes in between are sort of like, the original plan is it's going to be a Ben episode and then it becomes a Saeed episode or vice versa. So there's a certain rotation of the writers, so you never know what it's going to be. And you and I never, you know, we never sort
of...
Yeah, we don't cherry pick. It's just sort of like... This year it ended up that we wrote the premiere and then we slotted in again at episode 5, which just so happened to be the constant,
right.
You know, which was a brutal break, but I'm really glad that we broke. To that end, you know, I think the season 1 finale, Exodus, and the season 3 finale, Through the Looking Glass and the Constant, are probably my favorite writing experiences writing the scripts.
Yeah. I would actually kind of say the same. I mean... Those finales. And I would actually say this year's finale, Sight Unseen, obviously we don't know how it's going to land, but I really like this year's finale too. So
yeah, it's cool.
The fun thing about writing the finales is you really get to advance narrative in ways that is not always possible writing an individual episode. You know, when you're working on just a regular episode, you might learn something about that character. There might be some advancement in story, but the finales really sort of have a different cast to them. They are... sort of big, sort of action-adventure-y kind of movies in themselves, and that's what makes them kind of... They're challenging, but I think ultimately, you know, as a writer, those things that are hard and challenging end up being the things that are the most rewarding.
Favorite character?
My favorite character would be Sawyer. I wish I was as cool as Sawyer. I like, you know, his...
chest.
His that, too. You know, he's just... he's
sexy.
He's just sort of, you know, sexy, dangerous,
toned,
kind of...
Tanned.
Yes, he's kind of all the things I'm not in real life. So, who's your favorite character?
My first love is definitely Jack. I don't know. I sympathize with him because I feel like he can come across as being so imperious. And I know, like, on the boards, people are like, oh, my God, he's such an a-hole. Why is he so mean all the time? But at the end of the day, Jack is the one who is driving, like, all the things that are happening on the island. The decisions that he's making are eventually going to get the Oceanic Six off. And being a leader is tough, man. I mean, maybe his approval rating is low, but I think he's trying. I think he's trying his hard. He's doing his best.
Do you like him better with chest hair or without chest hair?
I miss the chest hair. I got to be honest with you. I do. I feel like when it was like when Delilah cut Samson's locks in some way.
Better grip.
One of the things that made Jack the burly, you know, man of the jungle is
his chest hair. Wow.
Know.
Okay. Let's just.
This is from Chirps 1007. Greetings, podcastaways, which I think is very clever. Podcastaways.
Oh, that's
I think it's good,
good
for people who listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
I remember that before you worked out the deal with ABC to establish an end date for the series, you said if Lost ever got prematurely canceled, you would cut to Jupe the orangutan sitting at a desk smoking a pipe and he would reveal all the show's secrets. Is there any chance of you ever actually filming this anyway and including it on the final season's DVD special features? I'd love to see what you would have come up with. Jupefully yours, Chirps.
The problem is that we haven't been able to make a deal with Jupe. Jupe has certain contractual issues that we can't actually overcome at this
His
point
His
writer
is like, I mean, all those demands.
He won't take forced calls. He demands certain food on the set.
Oh, my God.
He
throws his own dome.
Talk about the body hair yeah, issue. Exactly. I can't even actually get into that in a public forum.
We'll see what we can work out.
But if we can get Jupe signed on the dotted line, it would be fun to actually shoot that scene. We'd have to teach him how to talk, too.
Yeah, and sign on the dotted line. But other than that, and smoke a pipe and wear an ascot.
Well, the ascot, I'm thinking, is not really difficult in the list of things that are...
I'd put it somewhere between there. Speaking and sitting in the leather chair.
This is from BYO Controllers. Okay, you guys have the most amazing TV show imaginations that has ever been around. Thanks for making a great TV show. So we see in Michael's flashback how he came to be on the boat. Tom, Mr. Friendly, told him the island won't let you kill yourself. You still have more work to do. So knowing this, we have seen Michael escape the cold fingers of death 3 times now. Car crash, shooting himself, and Kimi trying to shoot him. So we know that it works. My question is the same thing happening to Jack in the future? We see him in the season 3 finale about to jump off a bridge and commit suicide, but suddenly there's a car crash and Jack is compelled to quit on his suicide and help those people. Is the island not letting Jack die either? Does this mean Jack also has more work to do? Part 2, is this also why Ben and Widmore cannot kill each other?
Well, 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 well. You saved the best for last.
I did, very intentionally.
You know, we were hoping someone would stumble on this. This is one of those sort of rare moments in the show where we actually do start setting up stuff way far in advance. And yes, that is exactly in the moment that Jack is about to jump off the bridge. There is a cosmic intervention of fate. And you see this Ben and Widmore are basically locked in some sort of battle where they understand the rules, although what those rules are and how those rules were explained to those guys is yet to be revealed. But they know that unless the island is done with them, they cannot be killed, especially by each other. So you got a cool little Highlander thing, minus cutting people's heads off actually does the trick. But that's exactly right.
Well, good. That was an excellent question. And so anyway, we hope you guys will enjoy the finale. This is also the time of year when we go into radio silence. So sadly, this will be our final podcast for season 4. And we will next be sort of back we will be in radio silence and off the grid until Comic-Con in July.
Yeah, and we'll probably do a couple podcasts between now and when the series comes back in January, just to sort of, you know, answer some questions and fill you guys in. But obviously, since the show isn't on, you're probably sick of us anyway. I mean, who cares, really?
That's 8 months, you know.
Just before we go, a special shout-out to the ABC Studios Advisory Panel, which basically got together because the show has not been nominated for a Drama Emmy for the last couple of years, which we understand because it's heavily serialized, and if you're not a watcher of the show, it's incredibly hard to drop in. It's sort of like, here, pick up the 3rd Harry Potter book, flip to chapter 17 and read it and tell us if it's a good chapter. And the way the Emmy voting works is you have to pick one episode from the season.
Well, it's actually more arcane than that. There's like popular vote nominates 10 shows, and then those 10 shows are screened. One episode is screened, as Damon is just saying, to a panel of people, and then there's a second panel of people that watch another episode of the show. So it's, you know, we find ourselves in a very difficult position of trying to figure out how do you submit a sort of standalone episode of Lost out of a series which is so heavily serialized.
Right, and so we felt amongst ourselves that we would be a very bad judge of which episode to choose because we watch the show. So kindly, Karen Manny and the ABC Studios advisory panel put together a group of people who don't watch Lost, and we screened a couple episodes for them, and they were able to determine for us which they felt was the best and the most self-contained. And we're going to move forward with their selection, and we're really grateful because they invested a lot of time and energy into making that selection. So
right. Well, so guys, it's been awesome. Thank you for all your support this season and for being crazy enough to listen to this podcast.
And crazy enough to watch the show. Season 4 has been, you know, a real blast for us. Obviously, it kind of stunk to be away for 100 days during the strike, but, you know, we really appreciate your patience and perseverance, and we really hope you like the finale. We're proud of it, and, you know, thanks for hanging in.
And we want to thank Chris for his awesome job as a producer.
Even though we rag on him constantly.
We still love him.
And our moms, who gave a memorable podcast that still Carlton is having nightmares about. But you'll move past that.
No.
And a very good therapist.
I love my mom. Carlton. Exactly.
Just the whole red wine thing.
Well, Damon.
Yes, sir.
Adios.
Adios, muchacho.
We'll see you later. Bye, guys.
I'm gonna limp on out of here.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
And that brings us to the end of this podcasting season. As the guy said, thank you everyone for joining us. It's been a wild ride. And don't forget, There's No Place Like Home, parts 2 and 3 air on Thursday, May 29th on ABC, and will be available the next day at abc.com.